The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde with the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Chicago Lighthouse and Leader Dogs for the Blind, a joint event on February 23rd, an online webinar. From the Blind Post, A Cruise to Panama by John Harden. From the NIH and National Eye Institute, a report on the anterior segment of the eye with regard to inflammation and immunity. From Cool Blind Tech, the Edmonton Airport has added ERA to their navigation services for the blind and disabled. So let's get started. Posted on Facebook, a collaboration event with the Chicago Lighthouse. Chicago Lighthouse will provide a brief overview of their services, focusing on their low vision rehabilitation and finding services near you. Leader Dogs for the Blind will highlight upcoming in-person and virtual camp opportunities for teens. This event will be Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022 at 3 p.m. There is a form on the website that you can enroll your attendance on. What to expect? Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022 at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, join Leader Dog and Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind for a collaboration event. Register for the collaboration event at https://leaderdog-org.zoom.us/meeting/register/small-t-j-e-u-i-o-q-z-g-p-g-d-0-i-i-u-j-t-v-6-t-d-3-v_cv-m-0-f-x-03-2. Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind will provide a brief overview of their organization while focusing on their low vision rehabilitation, including tips on how to find services near you. Leader Dog will be highlighting upcoming in-person and virtual camp opportunities for teens. Dr. Kelly Scherer, S-C-H-E-R-E-R, will be presenting from Chicago Lighthouse. She is the Director of Clinical Services at the Chicago Lighthouse and a residency-trained low-vision optometrist. She is an adjunct professor for three optometry schools, training doctoral optometry students in low-vision care. Today, she is here to share about the Chicago Lighthouse, low-vision rehabilitation, and the optometrist's role in it all. Leslie Hoskins will be presenting from Leader Dog. Leslie Hoskins is a Certified Orientation and Mobility Specialist, COMS, and the Outreach Services and Community Engagement Manager at Leader Dogs for the Blind. She is responsible for client recruitment, graduate engagement, and building relationships with other organizations within the blindness and low vision field. Leslie hosts monthly collaboration events, alumni hours for Leader Dog graduates, and is one of the hosts of Taking the Lead podcast. How to attend? Go to the website I listed and click on it. From the February Blind Post, Cruise to Panama by John Harden. This could be called traveling with COVID restrictions or traveling with Dave Cronk. The 11-day vacation started with a ride with a friend to our nearest Amtrak station in DeLand, Florida. We knew when we left home that the train was 3 hours late, but we took the ride at the time we could get it and sat outside on the platform. There, we didn't need to wear a mask until the train arrived. If we stayed in the terminal, we would have had to keep our mask on all the time. We knew we would have to wear it on the train except when we were eating. On the cruise ship, masks were required all the time inside and while in groups outside. If we were in a large group and had a drink, we were encouraged to sip and cover. Our cruise was organized by Dave Cronk of Travel One. He provides extra services for blind and visually impaired travelers. For example, he worked with the Princess Cruise staff so that they would be better prepared to assist us. There were about 30 in our party, and Dave and five other sighted helpers were along just to make sure all in our group were comfortable and not left out. Princess Cruise Lines has an app and a medallion system for doing everything on the ship. The problem is that the app is only marginally accessible. Dave and his other workers made sure we were all signed into the app because it was necessary for boarding the ship. Each passenger had a medallion that we kept with us at all times. It was with that medallion that we unlock our cabin, get a drink, buy a new shirt, or pay for a massage and anything else we wanted to do. The Emerald Princess left Fort Lauderdale at about 6 p.m. on December 29th, and Thursday was a great day at sea. Friday, New Year's Eve, we stopped at Grand Turk. In the evening, there was a big open deck party, but it was crowded and really noisy. So we got together with a few friends in one of the bars for a few drinks and a good time. At the stroke of midnight, we kissed our own wives and didn't kiss anyone else because of COVID protocols. New Year's Day was a day at sea. People ate, went for walks, shopped, listened to lectures and music, and generally relaxed and did whatever they wanted. On Sunday, January 2nd, we spent the day at Cartagena, Colombia. We also had a class telling us about the Panama Canal and its construction. This was in preparation for going through the canal on Monday, January 3rd. On January 3rd, we arrived at the Panama Canal around 6 o'clock in the morning. As we passed through the three chambers of the lock on the Atlantic side, someone explained everything that was happening and gave a lot of detail on how the lock system works. We arrived in the lake 85 feet above sea level, where we waited for our turn to go through the lock to the Atlantic Ocean. It took about 3 hours to get from the Atlantic Ocean to the lake. Part of that course, of course, is waiting our turn to go. On Tuesday the 4th, we stopped at Leman, Costa Rica. Faye and I stayed on the ship, and among other things, we got a hot stone massage. Wednesday was another day at sea. On Thursday, we were scheduled to stop in Ocho Rios, Jamaica. Because of COVID restrictions, we were not able to stop there before Thursday, and Friday were both days at sea. Saturday, January 8th, we docked in Fort Lauderdale at approximately 7 a.m. We left the ship at 8:30 a.m. Here again is another advantage of traveling with Dave Kronk. We all left the ship as a group and passed through customs with no fuss. Dave and his helpers found our luggage, which had been picked up at our cabin, and taken off the ship for us. He also made sure we found a cab to get us to the Amtrak station. I highly recommend traveling with Dave Kronk and Travel One. He can be reached by calling 618-409-0143. Email dkronk@htcsio.net. From nei.nih.gov. Report on anterior segment inflammation and immunity posted. NEI has published an executive summary from April 23, 2021, virtual workshop Immunity and Inflammation in the Anterior Segment of the Eye, hosted by the NEI Anterior Segment Initiative. Eye inflammation is the fifth leading cause of blindness in the U.S., with estimated costs similar to that of diabetic retinopathy. Host mechanisms that regulate immunity play a critical role in ocular inflammation, even in conditions not typically considered immune-based, since immunity regulates not just inflammation but also host tissue response to various stressors. These include diabetic retinopathy, age-related maculopathies, and glaucoma, among others. In 2019, the National Eye Institute, NEI, launched the Anterior Segment Initiative to better understand inflammation and its relationship with ocular pain, dry eye disease, the microbiome, and other eye conditions. The workshop identified relevant gaps in knowledge, barriers to the development of new therapies, and promising areas for research exploration. Reza, R-E-Z-A, Dana, D-A-N-A, doctor and Harvard Department of Ophthalmology, and Nida Sen, N-I-D-A-S-E-N, doctor, Janssen Retina and NEI volunteer faculty, co-chaired this event, which gathered 24 subject matter experts to address key topics broken into 4 sessions. 1. Immune homeostasis and regulation. 2. Aging, the microbiome, and environmental factors. 3. Neuroimmune interactions. And 4. Resolution of inflammation. The synopsis is at nei.nih.gov, and you can read the table of contents and probably click somewhere to read the entire report. Session 1, Immune Homeostasis and Regulation. When properly working, the immune system quickly responds to pathogens. Once infection is controlled, inflammation is quelled, and homeostasis returns. Achieving and maintaining homeostasis involves the orchestration of myriad components that can be influenced by an equal number of factors, such as genetics, age, and resident microorganisms. Failure to achieve homeostasis can lead to chronic inflammation and vision loss. In an introduction, Perez underscored the importance of understanding the relationships between the ocular surface, cornea, and the surrounding tissue, adnexa, and between the innate and acquired immune systems. Studying specific conditions such as graft versus host disease and dry eye offer opportunities to explore the interplay between innate and adaptive immunity, he said. Sharmila Masli, MASLI, PhD, Boston University Medical Center, presented regulation of ocular mucosal immune homeostasis. Masli explained that secreting goblet cells are key to maintaining the physical barrier between the environment and host cells. During chronic inflammation, goblet cells lose function or die off, leading to destabilization of the ocular surface's tear film, accompanied by reduced epithelial cell anti-inflammatory factors, which results in triggering the adaptive immunity. Studies of Sjögren's syndrome patients provide an opportunity to better understand ocular inflammation. In Sjögren's disease, damage to the conjunctival epithelium is accompanied by a loss of goblet cells and reduced tear mucin levels. Mucin 5-AC is a large gel-forming glycoprotein, and according to Masli, the measurement of tear MUC5A levels provides an indicator of goblet cell function. Masli said that in intestinal mucosa, goblet cells are involved in antigen presentation via transepithelial dendrites, TEDs, enabling dendritic cells to sample intestinal microbes. However, not much is known about the function of TEDs in the conjunctiva. Future directions to help understand ocular mucosal homeostasis, said Masli, include identifying additional factors related to the process, identifying dendritic cell-mediated mechanisms and their immune surveillance, and how toll-like receptor, TLR, induced responses influence ocular surface immune homeostasis. Other opportunities include using RNA sequence analyses to explore cellular changes in the conjunctiva and lacrimal gland, thus your tears. A barrier to such studies is the sparsity of human tissue. Holly Rosenweig, PhD, Oregon Health and Science University, presented the interplay between innate immune receptors and T cells in uveitis. Uveitis is a heterogeneous group of interocular inflammatory diseases affecting all ages, genders, and races. Together, the uveitides account for 10-15% of blindness worldwide. 2/3 of uveitis cases are autoimmune. The rest have an infectious origin. The commonly used experimental model of uveitis in the mouse has implicated innate immune receptors as important factors in uveitis. Researchers have explored the role of TLRs. Rosenweig suggested that the exploration of other innate immune receptors, including C-type lectin receptors, CLRs, and NOD-like receptors, NLRs, could be insightful. Rosenweig and others have shown that the NLR node 2 is expressed in the eye. The pediatric disease Blau syndrome, BLAU, which causes uveitis, is linked to a NOD 2 mutation that causes hypersensitivity to pathogens, which may implicate the interplay between infectious organisms and autoimmunity. Eric Perlman, PhD at University of California, Irvine, presented future directions in microbial keratitis research. Keratitis, or inflammation of the cornea, due to bacterial or fungal infections, is a major cause of visual impairment worldwide. A 2019 study found that microbial keratitis causes more than 1 million clinic visits in the U.S. The Fusarium fungus was responsible for a 2005-2006 outbreak of keratitis in the U.S. and Western Europe, involving contamination of contact lens solution. These fungi can form biofilms on contact lens storage cases and contact lenses, increasing transference to the cornea where the fungi can penetrate the corneal stroma. Fungal keratitis is one of the most common causes of corneal ulcers. Work by Perlman and others suggests neutrophils are the predominant immune cell type present in patients with corneal ulcers caused by bacteria and fungi. Neutrophils kill microbes by a reactive oxygen species and antimicrobial peptides. Neutrophils release proteases that can break down the intracellular matrix, causing corneal opacification, cataracts. Opportunities for future research include the exploitation of new omics techniques, genomics, transcriptomics, metabolomics, to better understand subpopulations of neutrophils and other immune cells. Future research needs include a better understanding of the role B cells play in ocular surface homeostasis. Traditionally, neutrophils have been difficult to study due to their short half-life. However, new techniques are enabling the identification of additional cell subtypes. Also needed is a greater understanding of the relationship between tissue environment and B cell activity. I won't read the other sessions. You can find this transcript online and read the abstract for yourself. Thank you. From coolblindtech.com, Edmonton Airport adds accessibility services for passengers, posted February 7th. Edmonton International Airport, EIA, has teamed up with AIRA, A-I-R-A, an online service that provides live, real-time assistance to people with visual impairments. EIA is now part of the AIRA Airport Network and a designated facility within the AIRA online app for users. When a passenger who is visually impaired arrives at EIA, they can use this app to call up a live agent who will guide them through the airport by using the camera in a smartphone. The agent can assist in reading information for passengers as well as navigation through the airport and even support safety by encouraging physical distancing from other people where possible. The agent and AIRA now have detailed information and maps of EIA, including the ability to determine where a user is inside the airport to help guide them. According to the Canadian Council for the Blind and results in its 2021 report, there are approximately 124,000 Albertans who have mild to severe vision loss. Steve Mabee, Vice President, Operations and Infrastructure, Edmonton International Airport, said air travel is a necessity, not a luxury, in our community, and using technology to support travel for everyone is something we're committed to. With AIRA, from curb to gate, our travelers who have visual impairments can now have a memorable airport experience, confidently and independently. We're glad to partner with AIRA and have this service available. We are honored to work with EIA to help connect more people to our service, but more importantly, to help make travel more accessible and inclusive to the broadest population. Troy Otillo, O-T-I-L-L-I-O, CEO of AIRA. Our goal is to help more people live, work, learn, and enjoy their lives more fully by giving them access to the visual information they need and deserve. EIA has several initiatives to support accessibility at the airport. This includes the Autism Aviators Program to help passengers who have autism, as well as parents or caregivers. EIA has an on-demand curbside assistance program and in 2020 converted a washroom into a pet relief station designed for service animals. EIA is working toward a visual paging system for passengers with hearing difficulties, and services are available with airlines for passengers who need mobility assistance. Passengers using the AIRA service will still be required to follow all safety and security measures while at EIA, including submitting their smartphones for security screening. EIA will work with its tenants and stakeholders to help educate them about the AIRA service and how it works. Also posted February 14th, Hadley launches new interactive Braille workshop. Since introduced more than 200 years ago, there have been many misperceptions about Braille, including it can take years to learn and is exclusively a language for the blind. In fact, neither is true. Braille is not a language. Rather, it is a system of writing that uses combinations of raised dots to spell letters and numbers and is used by both people who are blind as well as those with varying levels of vision loss. Who is Hadley? Hadley, a nonprofit organization, is a leader in distance and online learning for visually impaired adults from all 50 states in the U.S. and more than 100 countries, and is the world's largest Braille educator. Founded in 1920 as a correspondence school providing Braille lessons by mail, today Hadley offers workshops on hundreds of topics and connects users to live experts through its new learning hub, hadley.edu, which was built on months of research and based on the needs, wants, and desires of visually impaired adults, all at no cost. What is the new interactive Braille workshop? Hadley recently launched Braille for Everyday Use, a series of interactive workshops that includes a workbook mailed to user homes and accompanying audio instruction available by phone or online. With advances in technology and assistive devices, many with vision loss can now read documents and browse the Internet. Screen reading software makes computers, cell phones, and other electronic devices accessible. Yet more people with vision loss are embracing Braille for its ease and practicability, assisting in daily routines, including identifying buttons in an elevator, labeling on a pill bottle, or figuring out which public restrooms are for men or women. How can you enroll in Hadley's free Braille for Everyday Use workshop? To enroll in Hadley's free Braille for Everyday Use workshop series, call 1-800-323-4238 or order online. For more information on Hadley's array of online and distance learning classes, workshops, live discussion groups, and podcasts, visit www.hadley.edu. That's H-A-D-L-E-Y. Skipping session 2 on aging and starting with session 3 of the workshop on inflammation and immunity, neuroimmune interactions. Moderators, Zuzana Fabry, F-A-B-R-Y, Ph.D., University of Wisconsin, and Jerry Niederkorn, Ph.D., University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center, N-I-E-D-E-R-K-O-R-N. The cornea is one of the most densely innervated parts of the body. Corneal nerves are key to maintaining ocular surface homeostasis. However, relatively little is known about how they regulate it. Loss of corneal nerves due to infection with herpes simplex virus, HSV, can give rise to conditions like neurotrophic keratitis. Sensory peptides, such as substance P, are important drivers of inflammation via signaling with natural killer NK cells, explained Sumit Suvas, S-U-V-A-S, Ph.D., Wayne State University, who has examined their role in HSV infection. However, clinical trials of agents aimed at blocking substance P/NK cell receptor binding to disrupt inflammation have unfortunately failed so far. Such findings, said Suvas, potentially hint at an alternative unknown signaling pathway for substance P. The eye is an immune-privileged organ, which is not the same as immune isolation, according to Monica Carson, Ph.D., University of California, Riverside, who addressed what is known about resident macrophages in the central nervous system. Immune cells, she said, must be considered within the context of the tissue they inhabit, and factors such as age and sex. Technological innovations of the past two decades have advanced understanding of neuroimmune interactions. Such technologies include single-cell RNA sequencing, various omics techniques, and better cell imaging. Functional heterogeneity within immune cell types is increasingly recognized as an important theme. A possible 7 major types of microglia carry out a variety of roles. Microglia act as biosensors, defend against pathogens, and nourish other cells. Lauren Sansing, S-A-N-S-I-N-G, M.D., Yale School of Medicine, provided perspective from research of inflammation in the brain. Stroke, she said, is a good model for studying the kinetics of neuroinflammation in acute injury. Microglia and macrophages both have distinct transcriptional profiles in the brain and cycle through distinct phases in response to injury. For example, macrophages are initially pro-inflammatory after brain injury, but then later become crucial to neurological recovery. Microglia express homeostatic genes during the naive state, stop during the acute phase, and turn back on during recovery. She said macrophages can be considered the bulldozers that gobble up cellular debris. Microglia fine-tune repair. Session 4, Resolution. Moderators Pedram Hamrah, HAMRAH, MD, Tufts Medical Center. Michael E. Ziegans, ZEGANS, MD, Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. Resolution of inflammation was once considered a passive process, where the immune system simply fizzled out. Recent evidence redefines resolution as an active process, where the immune system works to restore immune homeostasis. Karsten Gronert, Gronert, Ph.D., University of California, Berkeley, provided an overview of specialized pro-resolving mediators, SPMs, that induce gene expression that stops recruitment of leukocytes and macrophages to sites of inflammation. SPMs are lipid mediators, short-acting cell membrane-derived signaling molecules. Scientists have extensively studied lipid mediators called eicosanoids. Every cell on the ocular surface expresses eicosanoids. However, little is known about eicosanoids' role in ocular immunity. That's spelled E-I-C-O-S-A-N-O-I-D-S. Use of drugs that target eicosanoids, such as prostaglandins, in the eye are based on research in other organ systems. Opportunities for future research include defining healthy inflammatory responses, ones that likely resolve without intervention, and pathological inflammation that requires therapy. Daniel Saban, S-A-B-A-N, Ph.D. at Duke University, summarized the state of the science on neuroimmune interactions in the eye. Corneal nerves are central to corneal structure and function, sensing the environment and maintaining the epithelium. Inflammatory processes can perturb normal corneal nerve physiology and contribute significantly to clinical disease. But we know almost nothing about how the immune system maintains nerve homeostasis in the cornea, he said. Studies of the peripheral nervous system suggests that macrophages play a key role in homeostasis. As an example, he cited the intestinal muscularis, where intestinal neurons bathe macrophages in colony-stimulating factor, CSF1. Saban has characterized the functional diversity of ocular macrophages using a lineage tracing technique. Ratios of short and long-lived macrophages varied by eye structure. He has also shown that corneal macrophages reside near corneal nerves. These observations suggest yet-to-be-understood relationships. Sunil Chauhan, C-H-A-U-H-A-N, veterinarian, Shepin's Eye Research Institute, advocated for revisiting mast cells, which play a principal role in allergic responses and are present on the ocular surface and in high numbers in the limbus, conjunctiva, and lid margin. In addition to sensing external stimuli and initiating inflammation, mast cells help resolve inflammation. Chauhan highlighted mouse studies that show mast cell activity increases during corneal transplantation, but that blocking mast cells delays allograft rejection. Mast cells also play a role in angiogenesis. Exploration of mast cell function outside of non-allergic eye conditions is needed, said Chauhan. Because they interact with corneal nerves, more research should be directed toward their role in itch, pain, and inflammation. Conclusions. Co-chairs Reza Dana and Nita Sen summarized the sessions. While the cornea and ocular surface are most often the target of anterior segment inflammation, it is important to recall that the adnexae, A-D-N-E-X-A-E, lacrimal and meibomian glands, eyelids, etc., that support the functioning of the ocular surface, are also increasingly recognized as playing a crucial role in pathogenesis of anterior segment inflammatory disorders. Certainly more research is needed to understand the interplay between the cornea and its surrounding tissues. Multiomics approaches will help identify key cells and biological mechanisms. Well, that's it for that meeting. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.